You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today I'm interviewing Natalie Hambelick with Oregon State University. Natalie is one of this year's Graduate Student Policy Award winners. Could you talk about your research into the effects of pesticides on amphibian declines? What negative ramifications would the loss of amphibians have on human society?
Sure. My graduate studies are based on factors contributing to amphibian population declines. So habitat loss, climate change, pollution, and infectious diseases are all culprits in causing both lethal and sublethal effects on amphibian populations worldwide. For my research, I incorporate the fields of disease ecology and aquatic toxicology to study how pesticides and infectious diseases can alter the physiology and behavior of their hosts. Currently, I'm working on a project examining the effects of two pathogens, the amphibian chytrid fungus and rhinovirus, that cause widespread diseases that can be harmful to amphibians. It's important to investigate how these factors may influence health for a few reasons. One reason is because they play an integral role in the food web. Not only do they consume many agricultural pests, they also consume human disease vectors like mosquitoes that can cause malaria. Also, amphibians are unique in that they have both aquatic and terrestrial life stages and are vulnerable to disturbances because of their superabsorbent skin. These characteristics make them really good indicators of ecosystem health. And since amphibians have been around since before the dinosaurs, their rapid and dramatic declines should warrant concern about how humans are affecting the environment.
You've been awarded through a number of scholarship programs, including the Ronald E. McNair Lewis Stokes Alliance for Minority Participation and William Randolph Hearst Scholarship Programs. Could you talk about these programs, how you got involved with them, and how the experiences have benefited you as a researcher?
Sure. So first-generation college students are usually faced with many obstacles when navigating both to and through higher education. Thankfully, there are programs that help students get the resources necessary to be successful. So I was lucky to be awarded as a William Randolph Hearst Scholar during my time as an undergrad at Sonoma State. This is an annual award and is for one student from each college in the California State University system who demonstrates academic merit, community service, and personal accomplishments in the face of adversity. So this award really springboarded me into the other programs that would support me immensely. I found out about the Ronald E. McNair Scholar Program, which is designed to prepare undergrad students for grad studies, mainly through involvement in research. And then likewise, the Lewis Stokes Alliance for Minority Participation, or LSAMP, aims to increase the quality and quantity of traditionally underrepresented students successfully completing science degrees, and it also aims to increase the number of students interested in and qualified for grad studies. Typically, college students from adverse backgrounds are at a disadvantage when getting involved with research as an undergrad because they have to choose between working for a paycheck or using their time to volunteer in labs doing research. Both the McNair Scholar Program and LSAMP make it easier for students to earn money for getting research experience they might not otherwise have had the opportunity to take part in. Additionally, these programs help with the cost of taking the GRE, required textbooks, and application fees for graduate school, which can be really costly. So as a McNair Scholar, each student is required to work with a faculty mentor on a 1 to 2 year research project, which ultimately culminates into a publication and presentation at the annual Scholar Symposium. Being able to design, conduct, analyze, and disseminate a research project as an undergrad definitely gave me an advantage in graduate school. I am very thankful to have been a part of these federal and state programs that helped me get to where I am now.
You're co-president for Women in Science at Oregon State University and have presented at forums that advocate for women in science, engineering, and math. Could you talk about your involvement with efforts to promote careers in science for women and the importance of these endeavors given the historical demographics of these fields?
So when young students are asked to draw scientists, they draw an Einstein-looking man, usually with big glasses, frazzled hair, with a lab coat, and a chemistry flask. I think there's this common notion that science is inaccessible because of the use of a lot of technical jargon. So I wanted to help in changing the stigma, particularly engaging young girls in science activities. During my time at Oregon State, I volunteered at events that target kids of all ages, with the goal being to introduce them to different STEM disciplines and really to change the perception that scientists can only be male. One of my favorite events is actually working with local Girl Scout troops and hosting amphibian field workshops. It's really fun. We go out to these beautiful lakes and streams, conduct visual surveys, and we teach them to use field guides to identify different amphibians. Additionally, the Women in Science group at Oregon State provides support and resources, particularly for grad students, research assistants, and early career faculty members. So in my role as co-president, last year we hosted an Outside the Lab seminar series, which brought in women professionals with PhDs that have had jobs outside of academia, like in the governmental, community engagement, and industry sectors. Because women are traditionally underrepresented in many STEM fields, I think it's really important to assist in normalizing women in science.
This year, you had the unique opportunity to participate in the Biological Ecological Sciences Coalition congressional visits as an ESA Graduate Student Policy Award recipient. Reflecting on your meetings on Capitol Hill this past spring, when communicating the importance of your research, did you find there were aspects of what you said that seemed to resonate particularly well with policymakers?
So when communicating with policymakers, especially about conserving biodiversity, I think it's really important to emphasize that our current situation is not all doom and gloom. While it's important to convey the urgency of the rapid deterioration of the environment, it's also critical to highlight solutions in how humans can better exist with wildlife and the environment. I think what best resonated with policymakers was using specific and also local examples of how federal investment in sciences has paid off. A team member of mine actually studied rice, and her district representative actually came from a generation of rice farmers. So I think that connecting on a personal level might also leave an impression, but it can sometimes be hard to tell.
How did your overall experience change your perspective of Congress and your concept of policy engagement in general?
The whole experience really helped to demystify what really goes on Capitol Hill. I was on the Oregon and California team, and we went to several offices of both House representatives and senators. It was so great to see the staffers and members of Congress be understanding and really supportive of sustaining NSF funding and even the concerns of scientists in general. Everyone we met with was approachable, friendly, and actually genuinely caring about the issues we brought up. We got to meet with Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, and he was even curious, asking me what was going on with wildlife diseases in our state. It was great to actually engage in a conversation with them. Also, I think that it's easy to get disheartened when decisions don't always reflect the best science. So something that became more apparent for me through this experience was that it's really important to acknowledge that although science definitely deserves a seat at the table in decision-making, there are also other equally important economic and societal contexts to consider. So being cognizant that the world cannot revolve solely around science, I think, is really important.
What advice would you give to other young scientists seeking to engage in public policy?
So my advice would be to develop and really refine your science communication skills to different audiences, like to school kids, the general public, and policymakers. So really knowing how to frame conversations and to know exactly what the big picture is of your work. Another piece of advice is to not only know your role as a scientist, but also as a constituent. As elected officials, it's their job to hear and vote on issues important to their state or district. So making your voice heard as a scientist is extremely important in this regard. If you don't speak up, no one else will.
And that was Natalie Hambelick with Oregon State University. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.